Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide. Today my guest on Hometown to Hollywood is the hilarious and extremely handsome teen heartthrob, Joey Bragg. Joey is best known for his work on Livin' Maddie, where he plays Joey Rooney, as well as The Outfield, Mark and Russell's Wild Ride, Fred 3, Camp Fred, and he recently guest starred on Criminal Minds. He also co-hosts his own podcast with fellow actor Kurt Long, Dudes of Future Past, which is extremely funny and which I really recommend. This is part two of our two-part interview. We had so much fun, and our conversation was so wide-ranging that we made it a double. Enjoy.
Although, again, I was just talking earlier about confidence and how big of a... So, I think finding success is relative to each person. Mm-hmm. And so if you never feel like you have fully gotten successful, then you're going to always have that flame under your butt that is forcing you to work harder. Because mm-hmm. once you feel like you've worked hard enough, you're going to slow down to a point where slowing down in this business also is something that I wish I would have known mm-hmm. earlier. Because there were certain setbacks I took with stand-up and steps away that I took with writing that I regret every day of my life. And I think if I would have just been a 16-year-old kid that would have realized how much happier I was going to be later if I would have just sit down and do this, as opposed to, sitting down on my TV or going out with friends. I think success is like a carrot on a stick in front of a horse. You're just constantly chasing it, and if you're constantly chasing it, you'll feel it
yeah.
more than you will if you find something and then say, I am successful.
Sit down and be done.
Yeah, yeah, right?
So, how do you handle rejection and haters? This is something everybody's, looking for hot tips on these days. I mean, man, you don't have to be anybody to have, you could be just, a middle school kid.
Oh, yeah.
And have a Twitter account and have to deal with trolls.
Yeah.
So, people with a higher profile get to deal with this in spades. What's your...
I get a lot of haters because I speak my mind a lot. And I'm not... I mean, I don't want to be the person that nobody knows their political view, or I don't want to be an actor. I want to be, I want Joey Bragg. I want my, perspective. I never want to have to feel like I'm being anyone other than myself. And so, I don't know. When I handle haters is something, especially with a Disney Channel show, you get a tweet that says, you suck. And then you're like, wow, that hurts. But then look at their page and it's an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Or you see somebody that's saying mean that doesn't like your show and you click on their page. It's just some fat dude sitting behind his computer that watches Disney Channel for some reason. It's just learning that as long as you are happy with what you are doing, who cares if anybody likes it? I don't care. I do a podcast and I never think anybody's listening. And then we finally have people that are replying and people are listening. And we have certain people that like it, certain people that don't. But you do it for the people that like it, or you do it for yourself. I don't think that there's anybody that is out there that handles haters well. I think that having haters is, especially with social media, constant. If you're going to... I take a lot of political views. I'm very not happy with how our election turned out and how that is all going, and I voice that opinion, and I've lost a lot of followers. And there's a lot of things that I've done where, my likes on my Instagram will go down. But I don't want to shield myself for the sake of having fans.
Well, you don't want to live an inauthentic life for the sake of trying to have everybody like, because the truth is, it's never going to happen. Not everybody's going to like you. I want to loop back really quick because I'll bet you there's a bunch of 11-year-old girls who are listening to this who are feeling very insulted right now. The fact that somebody might be an 11-year-old girl doesn't discount the validity of their opinion.
No, but it also, if a little kid ran up to you on the street and said, you suck, you wouldn't be like, thinking about it for the next couple days. You'd be like, that's a kid that is running up and just voicing their opinion.
And probably having a bad day and God knows what's going on in the background.
You think I suck. I think a lot of things suck.
Right.
There's a lot of things I think aren't good. But taking into account somebody's opinion like that, if this is going too long, we can make it a two-parter. I talk a lot.
Okay, well, actually, I'm really enjoying this. I just want to be mindful of your schedule.
I'm good.
We might make this a two-parter.
Let's
do it.
You
like it, really?
Yeah.
You'll be my first two-parter.
Yay, woohoo!
Oh, this is really cool.
Yay!
I like this.
I know, me too.
Okay, super.
But rejection.
Rejection.
Yeah, I want to get to that.
Because this bears discussing.
Yeah.
Because rejection is like, oh my God, it is the lifeblood of this industry.
Yeah, no, it is. And there's a lot of people that can't handle it. Mm-hmm. Or a lot of people that get too upset. But this is a rejection.
It's Rejection City.
It is, yeah.
Los Angeles. Yeah, city of rejection.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and the hardest part about going up and asking a girl out is the possibility of her saying no. But then you go and you're acting, and you go and you work on this audition, and you do the character for them, and then you don't get a no, you just don't get anything. You just don't get a call, you don't get an email, you just don't ever hear from them again.
Death by silence.
Yeah, and so I like that aspect of it. Like, I enjoy, because especially now, my biggest advice to people that are auditioning and trying to be actors is as soon as you're done with that audition, look at those sides, rip them up, cuss out the character, do whatever you have to do to just have the most negative outlook on what you just did, and then just block it out of your mind and just be surprised when that email for the callback comes.
You crack me up, because right now I'm thinking about what Dove's, like, contrasting advice would probably be. She'd be like, send that character white light.
Yeah, no. I send no light at all. I do this thing where people think I'm crazy after an audition. I'll find the nearest trash can. I will be, like, vocal, and I talk bad about the character, and I rip it up into as many little pieces as I can. That way, when I have to reprint those sides, I have to reprint them, and I like that feeling, as opposed to finding them in the back of my car constantly when I'm looking for something.
With a coffee stain on them. I'm dying. That is so funny. Well, I want to loop back a little bit, because we're having so much fun, and we're just all over the place.
Yeah. I meander.
Well, yeah, but the conversations are good ones. So you have an extremely unconventional background for getting into acting. We've established that. But still, you have to have an agent and a manager, like all actors. How did that happen? How did you get an agent and a manager?
It's another thing that kind of fell into my lap. I was doing stand-up for 3 years at this point. I was about 16. I did my first shows in L.A., I did a bunch of shows in L.A., the Hollywood Improv and Laugh Factory and all those, and my second show ever was at the West Side Comedy Theater, and the woman that was my same management company that I'm still with, her name is Sarah Kleigman, saw me and was like, just saw something, I guess. They all think, or just saw an opportunity.
It's what they do.
Yeah.
It's what their gift is,
yeah,
in part.
And so I met her, and then I loved her. She's the sweetest lady. She's no longer a manager, but we're still friends. We talk all the time. She's doing amazing. She's making challah bread for a living. I met my then agent, who was a stand-up agent from ICM, and he came up to me and was talking, and just the contrast of how she was talking to me about it and how he was talking to me about it, she was like, you don't have to move down here, you can send in tapes, but, I mean, making money with stand-up is something that is very hard, and so moving down there, being a stand-up, would be virtually impossible, so acting was something that they, you know, talked to me about, and of course, mm-hmm. I mean, every kid's dream is to go on a set, say a couple lines, and have people bring you stuff. Like, it's, people always say, like, ooh, I caught the acting bug. Yeah, I would catch the acting bug, too. Anybody catches the acting bug, because people treat actors like royalty on set. There's no electrician that is done with their job and then can go sleep in a trailer when they're needed, until they're needed next. Like, they're so glorified, because it's glorified, it's a gloryful job.
Yeah.
But I met my agent and my manager, and I was signed with that agency, ICM, for a few years, and I've been signed with that management at Levity, LEG, now, for however long that's been.
So you started with the manager who found you at the comedy club, and then did they, like, set up a meeting with prospective agents?
That agent was also at that same show.
You got both the agent and the manager out of one show.
Out of one show, yeah. The same, the agent was there to see me. The manager was there to see someone else. And so the manager, I just saw me perform, but the agent was, like, there to see me perform.
That's amazing. That is really, see, this is really interesting. I love, you know, your story illustrates that there are a zillion ways up this mountain.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't just one way. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about the whole conversation that I'm always in, is like, no, there isn't just one way to do it. Which is to say, you can't really do it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose you can really do it wrong, but, you know.
Yeah, porn.
You can do
porn
it really,
wrong.
Really wrong. Don't go down that path. Okay.
But then also, that being said, like, Sylvester Stallone.
We aren't going down that path.
Okay, we're not going down that path.
But comedy, and there you are in the club as a young teenager, and they're like, you, kid, you've got this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, star power, or whatever that is, or just the it factor, or the X factor, whatever you want to call it, but I think it's relative. I think if the right people see you, you know, comedy and humor is different to everybody, talent is different, that's why people vote on America's Got Talent. You don't watch all the auditions and go, that person's the most talented. You have to, like, there's a process, and I think just throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks is kind of the way to go. If you want to be a writer or a performer, start making YouTube videos and just throw every idea you have out there. If you want to be a stand-up, go out there and do it. If you want to be an actor, enlist in musical theater in your school and just do everything you can, because moving down here and hoping that somebody's going to see you and go, you have the it factor that you look in the mirror and see in yourself, is, I mean, a crapshoot.
That's not a good bet to make.
Yeah.
Do you have anybody who inspires you, Joey?
Yeah, yeah.
Who inspires you?
Pete Holmes is somebody that just had a comedy special on HBO, had a show on TBS, and when I grew up watching stand-up. So when I got the internet when I was a kid, I would watch, like, stand-up from College Humor and Live at Gotham and just, like, young comedians that weren't really super famous. They weren't the Dane Cooks or the Dave Chappelle's of that time. And Pete Holmes was one of the ones I saw that I loved his voice, and I thought he was the funniest I've ever seen. And so when I was talking about wanting to do stand-up, I found him on Facebook, because the internet's in a glorious place. I sent him a Facebook message saying, like, I'm 13, I've written some jokes, I just don't know how to start. I don't know what to do. Like, I want to start.
How do I find my way into this world?
Yeah, exactly.
Especially as a kid.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when most clubs are 21 and over.
Exactly.
And I got the most amazing response from him. Just a long letter of, like, going through what I should do, what I shouldn't do, and how to get up on stage. And if I can't get up on stage, find my own stage and put on my own show. And so that's something that I just made such an impact on my life. And I am here because of that response. And I see what he's doing and how nice of a person he is. And just that's what I want to do. I want to be, even though this podcast isn't the most inspiring thing in the world, but I'm glad that I had somebody like him telling me how to do it. And now I see him doing exactly what I want to do. He has a new show on HBO called Crashing, produced by Judd Apatow. And it's just, he's amazing. And I look up to him so much. And I think Pete Holmes is probably the person. Ricky Gervais, too. Just anybody that doesn't hold anything back. Anybody that just does exactly what they want to.
Uh-huh.
There are so many people that come out here and do what they feel like they should be doing.
Oh.
Or do what people tell them they should be doing.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, if you are in an acting class and you dread it every day, you shouldn't be in an acting class. I went to an acting class and audited it, and all I thought was, why would I spend my time doing this as opposed to going to another improv class or doing stand-up every night? Like, you just find what you want to do and hope that other people agree that they want to watch you do what you want to do as opposed to doing whatever is going to get you in the door.
I love that you say that. Dove and I both feel really strongly that when her career started to finally kind of take off and happen, which is to say when she started to get cast finally after the 10,000 auditions, was when she basically just sort of threw up her hands and said, I know what they want me to do, but I'm going to do what I want to do. And they're going to like it, and they're going to cast me, or they're not going to like it, but either way, it's a win-win. Because I'm not going to get stuck doing something I hate.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be hired for something I don't want to get, you know, sticking with. And if they hire me, yay, I get to do it my way. It's like, it's a win-win.
Yeah.
And no one ever succeeds doing it in a false, inauthentic way.
Yeah.
Because you can feel it ring false.
Yeah, I mean, you know? And there are people that are making a living off being a person that they aren't really on the inside. And
but not for long. I mean,
yeah.
You can't sustain that. You can fake it, and people fake it in relationships. People fake it.
Yeah.
And there's the whole fake it till you make it thing, which we started with confidence in this conversation.
Yeah, but
I think different.
Yeah, faking confidence is not changing who you are.
Mm-mm.
It's making, you know, just showing other people that you can believe in yourself. And I think faking confidence is not something that I am a proponent for. Faking confidence until you have real confidence is something you're proponent for.
Because it's about getting to the place where it's real.
Yeah. And one thing that was also said to me when I was a little kid is that you can get anywhere with confidence in a clipboard. Like, if you just are confident about it, and you can see it when walking, you can walk behind the scenes at Safeway or Bonds or whatever. And if you're walking around acting like you're not supposed to be there, someone will kick you out. But if you walk around acting like you're supposed to be there, you're supposed to be there. And there's something that goes with this business. If you always feel like you should be where you are, then you're going to belong where you are. And I think that, I know that, like, counteracts a lot of what I've said earlier, but if you just believe in yourself and who you want to be and what you want to be doing is worth doing, then, I mean, that's what success is.
I actually buy that. I buy that completely. That's in alignment with my experience.
Yeah.
Definitely. Talk to me about your experience with the Disney Channel.
Okay.
How did that even happen?
They were like the first people I auditioned for, and they loved. I would go into auditions for them constantly, and I would drive down from the Bay Area and go
5 hours each way.
Yeah, 5 hours each way, and doing and auditioning for the Brother and Dog with the Blog and all these different pilots. And my first pilot I booked was for a Disney XD show called Gulliver Quinn, with John Heder. And in the audition process, I would do stand up for them, and which was they always, you know, if you're a singer in Disney Channel, they have you sing. I did stand up for them. They liked it. I got cast in this pilot. I left high school as a sophomore, I guess, to film this pilot. Filmed the pilot, and they were like, in 6 months, this is the best pilot we've ever shot. We love it. It's so expensively made. John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite's the star. Of course it's going to get picked up. It's going to get picked up. So I spent this, like, 6 months going back to school after filming this pilot, doing stand-up regularly, thinking, like, this is going to happen. I got to, like, start preparing for this. Obviously, didn't happen. But it was just that kind of thing where it's rejection, and I was so young, and it was my first thing, or one of my first things, and it was just not what I enjoyed. I don't like sitting around and waiting for a call. I like to be proactive and doing what I want to be doing. And I had a blast shooting the pilot, and it was fun. When I went back to Disney and auditioned for a bunch of things, I auditioned for the Brother and Dog with a Blog. I was testing, and then right in the middle of the room, I'm not going to name names, but one of the actors was asked what they thought about me playing their relative, I'm going to say, to keep it vague. And they were like, not a fan.
And oh my god, seriously?
Yeah. And so I drove back, and I just went.
Were you there for that?
Yeah, I was right next to the person that
wow.
said that.
Wow, okay.
And so I auditioned for other things, and they just kept bringing me in and kept bringing me in. And there were certain roles where they would change it to be like me, and there was a character in this pilot that was changed to be like a stand-up, and it was the character I was going to play. They were going to make the lead, and it was going to be about a kid that wanted to do stand-up, and then, you know, things happened, and that changed, and then I was going to be the friend that wanted to do stand-up, and it was just the kind of thing where that's not what I wanted to do. I didn't want another 6 months of waiting for a pilot to get picked up. Just that feeling, it just wasn't fine. I don't like anxiety. I'm going to feel anxiety about anything, but just putting my faith in someone else doing something for me.
When it's totally out of your hands.
Yeah, and it was absolutely out of my hands, and it was nothing I could have worked for. It was nothing I really could have done, so I turned that pilot down and said I didn't want to do it. And then they moved on, and I was brought in for a couple other things, and then Liv and Maddie came along, and bits and pieces, and I went in and I auditioned for it. And I think I had an initial audition where I met with John Aron and the producers and the casting director, and then they brought me in to do it in front of network, and I did it in front of network, and then before a chemistry test or any kind of test, they have you sign a contract. I didn't want
to
do it.
That's how that works. Before you get to the final, you have to sign the contract, which is just nerve-wracking as heck.
And I didn't want to do it. It wasn't about the money. It was about the 6 months of sitting there on my butt waiting for them to call.
Well, and what people don't understand is during that maybe 6 months, 6 months is as long as it gets.
Yeah.
Apparently Disney Channel takes longer than anybody to make that decision. You can't take on any other potentially conflicting projects during that time. You're basically on hold.
Yeah, you're on hold for 6 months.
It's
a long time to not be doing anything. And I was obviously doing stand-up, but it's the kind of thing where my future is up in the air. Whether or not I'm moving to L.A. from home and leaving my high school behind or not. And so it wasn't worth the stress. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And so I turned it down because I didn't want 6 months of exclusivity. And then, you know, they came back with more money, and I was like, it's not about the money, it's about the exclusivity. I didn't turn it down from a place of, I don't want to do your show. I turned it down from a place of, I want to be more in control of what I'm doing. And then, you know, they brought it back a couple more times without changing, and I turned it down because they never change the 6 months exclusivity. That's just what has to happen.
Yeah, they can't. They can't. Yeah.
And so, finally, like, 2 months go by, and then I get a call about them coming back with 3 months exclusivity. My stand-up was void. Anything I write was voided in the contract, and just basically I could do whatever I wanted, but also I was going to be in this Disney Channel show. And so that was like, yeah,
okay.
That's exactly what I wanted to do. 3 months of not doing anything else after we shoot the pilot.
And that's more normal. That's more of a normal window.
Yeah, and 3 months, as long as 3 months is, when I'm, like, going back to school, I'm not going to book a job in 3 months. I'm not going to book a job in 6 months, realistically. But the fact that somebody was telling me that I couldn't, and then I would not get the pilot picked up, and then it's just like, all right, now it's back to doing whatever you want to do, whether it comes in your lap or not. And then I turned down, and then they brought it back, and I did it, obviously, and in those 3 months, the last day of my 3 months
it was the last day.
It was the last day.
Jeez.
And they were like, and I was like, huh, well, they called me, and then I got the script, and the character's name was Joey, and it was perfect, and it was great. And then I had the best 4 years of my life filming that show.
That was a special show. You know, it was our first big experience, too.
Yeah.
And so when it's your first experience, you don't have a lot to compare it with. You're like, well, this feels really extra fun and special and good, but how do you know? It's not always like that. But to have so many people on the show who were career fill-in-the-blank, you know, writers and grips and electricians and hair and makeup people and wardrobe and everybody else say, this is the best show I've ever worked on.
Yeah.
You know, it was amazing.
And it's also amazing, too, because I was working with people that believed in me and were, like, big fans of what I was already doing.
Yeah.
And there were certain things, like, when I talk about opportunities that I've passed up or just been too lazy and not taking advantage of completely, I mean, I probably could have written an episode had I not been a lazy 16-year-old kid. Or I probably should have been doing stand-up and not let that fall through the cracks and just, you know, done both. Because there were certain times when I would cancel shows because, you know, we're filming later than they said I would and certain things, and that looks bad, so that kind of freaked me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the guy that cancels shows last minute, so I kind of slowed down a lot with stand-up, and there's a lot of, you know, I think a lot of things that I would have done differently, and I think that in the future, all that did was teach me what I'm going to do differently, and it was I'm so happy that it happened at such a young age, because everything has happened for me at such a young age.
You're not even 21 yet.
Yeah. That being said, like, I was in a plane from, me and my brother were flying from Orlando to Houston in a plane from something I was shooting with my brother, not shooting with my brother, I was shooting it and he came along with me. We were in this plane. It was right after Liv and Maddie went down. Me and Audrey had been dating for like 3 years. And we got up, and there was a fire, or electrical fire in the cockpit. And so the plane just started to fall. And it was super crazy. The stewardess came on the thing and was like, I know you're all wondering what's going on. I don't have an answer for you. Crash landing positions for everyone in coach. And like, we thought the plane was going down.
Oh my God.
And there was a lady beside us that was just like screaming in Spanish and sobbing, and behind us was a mom and her little daughter, and the daughter was going, what's happening, mommy? And the wife and the mother was going, like, it's okay. Like, it was like a movie of a plane crashing. And I was sitting there and I was like, I'm cool with this. Like, I have had 4 years on an amazing job with amazing people. I've had 3 years with a girlfriend that I love more than anything. I just, you know, my life always felt like it was going really early, and that's just because I was gonna, you know, have a short one. And I'm saying this, meanwhile, my brother, who just graduated college, is sitting there like, I'm not ready to die. Like, why are you so comfortable with this? And I think that kind of put a lot of stuff into perspective. Like, mm-hmm. I've just been so incredibly lucky that even if nothing happens, I'm just happy with what I've done. Because this is such a business where you never know what's going to happen, I, as far as I'm concerned, have already found just an amazing thing. And that was an amazing 4 years. And it, again, I don't think I'll ever find what I think of as success, because I don't know what success is. I've never felt content with where I am in my career, but it was an amazing, amazing start. And a lot of people think that, like, a Disney Channel show is the roller coaster that's going to take you on to the rest of your career. But in real life, it's more of a diving board that just gets you up. It gets you an amazing social media following, which now is going to have an everlasting effect on whether or not I get cast in things. And it's just, you just got to kind of find your way from there, as opposed to hoping that that shows you your way.
It's, to me, I always think of it as an extraordinary springboard. It's really the same metaphor.
Yeah.
Because it gets you up, but then what do you do with it? Well, part of that's up to you. Part of that's luck.
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, but to get up is like its own gigantic, amazing thing, to have that kind of platform, because nobody builds a platform like they do. I mean, it's just...
No, they're amazing.
Amazing. So let's see if there's anything hot that I missed in here.
Ooh, any hot topics?
Any hot topics? So I know you're a pessimist. That's okay. It's funny to me. A lot of comedians seem to be.
Yeah, I think we're just dark.
You're just dark people.
Dark, cynical. Yeah, I always am looking for, because if I expect the negative, then the positive is more surprising and positive. You know?
Okay. Yeah. And of course, me being who I am, which is like a little more close, a little closer with Pollyanna scale.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, all right. So.
Because I think this, everybody's optimistic when they first start. But then being able to stay optimistic is just, you got really lucky. Because you guys got really lucky.
Oh, we were terribly lucky.
Yeah.
We're still terribly lucky.
Yeah. I mean, Hairspray Live, amazing things have happened. And being able to stay optimistic is something that you should be able to hold on to if you can. I think that my pessimism, I don't mean to step
on you. No.
My pessimism kind of is forcing me to never feel satisfied, which is making me, because, I mean, I don't want to be the actor that just acts and acts and acts and acts and then does things. I don't want to be somebody that acts and sings, or, I mean, everybody wants to do something different, but what I want to do is find the outlet for my voice. And so I think if I'm never feeling like I've found that outlet, I'm going to constantly be trying to better myself. And I think that's kind of why my pessimism.
It's part of your winning formula. It's part of what works for you. It's like to me, it's a way for you to say, stay hungry.
Yeah.
People are like, stay hungry. Don't get too content, or you'll you know, get soft and stop.
And when you
like,
said hungry, it reminded me of humble, because that is a big part of this.
Huge.
There are so many people that are on a set, and there are so many actors that are, I'm going to try and keep this as PG as possible, but just jerks. And just aren't nice and entitled and will get on that set and think that everybody is there for them as opposed to everybody is there to make that product the best it can be.
You just hit my biggest pet peeve of all time.
Yeah. Because there is half the people that are, especially kids that start in this business.
Entitlement is horrifying.
Yeah.
In children especially.
Oh, yeah.
But anybody.
And it's something where when you're living in a place like this, it's surprising when you meet somebody that you can look in the eye and feel like they are treating you like they would treat anybody else. Because when you're an actor like this and people treat you like as nice as they possibly can because you could help them out, or they treat you as nice as they possibly can because they're a PA and that's their job. But people aren't nice to you because you're a nice person unless you are a nice person. People are nice to you because that's their job. And people are paid to be nice to you. Because if a grip doesn't do their job, they'll get a new grip. But if the leading star on a show doesn't do their job, they have to wait until that person is happy enough to do their job. And it is something that pushes a lot of people off a cliff of reality.
That can be really, really bad for the character of a person.
Oh, yeah.
So related to that, though, so you still, though, you find that you must somehow stay positive to some extent, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get out of bed in the morning positive kind of thing? So, you know, despite the fact that I know you call yourself a pessimist, and that's like, that's your maybe
I think I'm
tilt, but you also have to have a kind of internal optimism of some kind, or you wouldn't go back out there.
Yeah.
You wouldn't write a new script.
Yeah, exactly. I think what I'm struggling with right now is finding that balance of optimism and pessimism, because I feel like if I'm too optimistic, I will get lazy. Mm-hmm. And I have a horrible habit of getting lazy. And can sit around or get writer's block and then just not be able to find my way out of a hole that I feel like I'm sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into. And I think that a lot of that is just probably because I'm a stressful person, and I think that I was raised in a house where you handle everything with honesty and loud voices. And so, I think I'm optimistic to a point. I think that the pessimism helps kind of bury the optimism. Like, I can be optimistic to where I think I can go up on stage again and do what I do and never lose that ability. But then also I don't want to feel like I can do it whenever I want, so I put it off and never do it. Because there's a lot of things that I put off and never do that I should have done a long time ago. And I know it's gonna benefit what I want to do if I do them, but for some reason I can't find that motivation. I don't know if that's because I'm too pessimistic or too optimistic. I'm trying to find that perfect balance of wanting of never feeling satisfied, then also feeling driven enough to, you know,
but not keep shut working. Down by that.
Yeah, exactly. Not feeling like there's no hope. I need that hope with also feeling like, you know, it's not going to fall into my lap.
So how do you generate the hope? Where does that come from?
I think it just comes from, I mean, the people around me is a big thing. I've found an amazing group of friends that are so supportive and want to also be doing the best thing. I've hung out with a lot of people down here that are more damaged to hang out with than it's worth, because they feel satisfied and they feel like, oh wow, guys, can you believe we're child actors? I have a heavily recurring guest star on this show, and I have a heavily recurring guest star on this show. Let's party or whatever. But I don't see that and think, like, I have time to party. I have a constant feeling of, I have not enough time. Like, life is short, and I need to do this now or never.
Well, and there's a whole, there's a real wisdom to, you know, the old strike while the iron is hot. The iron is hot where you are.
Yeah.
And you're a very, very smart guy, and you see it.
Yeah.
You know, you see it.
Yeah.
It's like, the iron doesn't stay hot forever.
Not at all. And it can get hot again, but it's much harder to make it hot again than to, you know, keep it
hot.
Yeah. Because there's so many things that I could have kept this iron so much hotter had I gone, if I had a time machine, or if I could tell Joey to do more things, I would totally do that. But right now where I am is at a place where I feel like that feeling I have of wanting to go back in time and tell myself to do it differently is just motivation for me to tell myself now, don't think that in 2 more years.
Well, and I love that you bring that up, because truthfully, like, you're 20, and it's a very fascinating time in a human's life. You know, it's like you are really turning that corner into genuine adulthood, and you are an exceptionally mature person anyway. But the stuff that you're grappling with right now, people are lucky to grapple with at 40.
Yeah.
In many cases. So the good news for you, I say, as your friend, and someone who cares about you, is that you're doing awfully well.
Yeah, no, I know.
And anybody who's listening, who's like maybe in your age zone, who's like, you know, in high school or college or whatever, it's like, all of the lessons that you're learning right now, all of those things that you really regret, like, oh God, I blew this. Like, guess what? Let that be fuel for your fire,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It can be what it takes to get you where you want to
go. Yeah, I think regret is something that I hold on to a lot. Because there's a lot of things that I wish I would have done differently. But then when I also take a step back and look at where I am, I'm the luckiest 20-year-old in the world.
You did all right.
Yeah. No, when the plane was going down, I was totally like, all right, cool. Because I no longer have to be stressed. Like, I would so much just go to sleep forever than have to continue to be stressed and anxious. But I think there's no getting around that. I think that's just kind of the person I am.
There's an upside to everything. That's hilarious. Well, so talk to me about your podcast.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
How did it start? What do you do?
Me and Kurt started when we were going to write a pilot that never got written. The outline is there. Outlines. Ooh, if anybody wants to read an outline that is worth a crap, read our outline. But he just had a studio, and me and Kurt are such good friends and can already talk forever. And we just thought it was something that nobody is out there doing. That there's, especially now, our country is so divided. And a lot of that division comes from people that are older, thinking that the people that are younger are not helping, or the people that are younger are not helping, thinking that the older people are too content with it being corrupt. And there's just so many things that the generational bridge from, I mean, he's a Gen Xer, I'm a, you know, millennial.
He's basically twice your age.
Yeah,
right?
He is more than twice my age. And it's the kind of thing where being able to find common ground is something that I wish people could find in the real world. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. There are certain things where we talk about something, and I mean, we pretty much agree on everything, but there are certain things where, like, kids will send us letters and be like, I had listened with this with my mom, and it helped us talk about, you know, how using our phone could help in the real world as opposed to taking time away from, you know, me looking around and experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain things that we talk about where I have a different viewpoint than he does, and it's just that kind of thing where the world is so much more different now, and it's changing at such a faster pace than it has in the last century, that there's a division in not only people that, you know, think it should evolve in this way, and people that think it should evolve in this way, but there are people that find that division in just age. And there are so many people, and I have dealt with ageism my entire life. And so being able to have somebody like Kurt that doesn't look down on me and looks at me as a peer really helps in kind of pushing that agenda that age isn't really a thing. It's people. We're all people. We're all going to die. I could die in a year, and, you know, he could live on for another 40. And it was just, it doesn't matter how old you are. Once you have hit a certain point, I get talking down to a 13-year-old. I hated it when I was a kid, and people, other comedians would, like, talk down to me and condescend. But now I look at 13-year-olds, and I'm like, I understand it. I understand looking at somebody and thinking, like, you don't have enough life experience to feel like we are equals. I didn't feel like that when I was a kid, but now I feel like I want to kind of push that. There's nothing that says somebody that's 13 can't have a conversation with somebody that is 50 that doesn't have to be about Pokemon. It can be about whatever you want, because that kid has a much different perspective than you do. That doesn't mean it's wrong, just a different perspective.
Yeah, and it's valid, because it's their perspective.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're kind of trying to push. And there's not really a podcast out there that's building that generational gap bridge.
I love that.
Yeah.
I really love that. And they are really, really fun, and I really do recommend them. They've got a little explicit language for,
yeah.
you know, a lot of my listeners are, you know, young enough that that might not be a thing for them or their
yeah.
parents, but they're funny and they're intelligent
Thank
and
you.
They're fascinating and,
yeah.
and I'm a fan.
And long.
And long.
Yeah.
we're gonna chop this one into two pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, they're long. And so, you know, that's great. You just, you know, listen to it as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, people listen to certain episodes and don't listen to others. I talked about getting arrested in an episode that.
Right.
I mean,
you were at a protest.
Yeah. Got arrested protesting.
Arrested at a political protest. Not
yeah.
for any
nope.
other things.
And it was, and we got to talk about like after the fact, because I mean, I lost a lot of followers when I took the heavy political stance that I did, when things started to feel more real.
Mm-hmm.
And now that things have become real, when they felt very fictional, I've taken a heavier political stance and I've lost a lot of followers. And I think that it's something where you kind of have to weigh your options, because you can lose a lot of followers, but then also gain followers that share your opinion and like to hear you speak from the heart, as opposed to like to see you on Disney Channel being funny.
I'm with you. You know, I had a conversation with an acting coach earlier this season when things were looking real but weren't real yet, as
yeah.
you said. And she was pointing out to me how amazing it seemed to her how political I was getting on my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, well, what am I supposed to be? I'm an authentic person by nature.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend that I feel something that I don't feel in order to, what?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Keep like, my followers?
Yeah,
or,
wear a
or,
veil.
Or make a little more money, but, like, live a lie? Are
yeah.
you kidding? You know, no. So, you know, I'm extremely liberal. I'm having a terrible time with our current political situation.
Me too, yeah.
I'm not silent about it, and I feel just the same way you do. And I honestly feel, too, that it is the responsibility of people who are artists and who are thinkers and who are in any position of influence whatsoever. And yes, guess what that means? Actors,
yeah.
too. And anybody in the public eye to speak their truth.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Because
yeah.
because they can make it a safer place for other people to speak up too and
yeah.
affect change.
And a big part of what has happened is misinformation and uninformation. There's a lot of people that were told the wrong thing or that trusted the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so I think somebody that is speaking from a biased place, but a biased place that is fueled by knowledge, as opposed to a biased place that is fueled by, you know, want or need.
Or misinformation, or just ignorance. Ignorance, simple ignorance, literally just
yeah.
not knowing.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in California. I grew up in such a bubble. I grew up in you know, very liberal San Francisco. I didn't think homophobia or racism existed anymore. I moved down here, another bubble, that I don't think homophobia and racism existed anymore, or sexism or misogyny or any of that. And then when that light is shown and it does exist, and not only does exist, but exists with a majority, it's hard to sit back when you have people that are, when you have 1.7 million followers on Instagram that just liked your picture of you playing Pokemon Go and not thinking that those 1.7 people could benefit from hearing something that is true and comes from the heart. You know?
Yeah. No, I honestly feel that it's a legitimate responsibility.
Yeah.
I do. And we need to be respectful with each other, and it, you know, conversations can occur that are about curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just staking out positions and drawing lines.
Yeah.
Because the only way our country is going to be the country that we all want it to be.
Yeah.
Is if we can communicate civilly and,
yeah.
and find the common ground.
Yeah. And I have a problem with respect. I have a problem. I respect every person I meet. But there is something about thinking that there is another person on this earth that is beneath you for any reason. I can't respect anybody that has that mindset.
I am totally with that. And that's actually been one of our sort of mantras, is like, nobody is unimportant.
Yeah.
Nobody is unimportant. And this takes us back to being on a set, you know. You don't be a little, you know, young star and show up on a lot and go, oh, the PA, you know. Yeah. And he's like, are you kidding? That PA has a degree, probably, and is in the DGA, and is maybe going to be your director in 10 years, and is working 80 hours a week right now, or 100, and deserves your respect more than anybody else in the lot, probably.
Yeah.
You know, like, every human deserves respect. I'm completely with you on that. But this is an industry where you can get your head turned around on that
stuff. Absolutely. This is an industry where respect isn't handed out, and it's something that is not even earned, but it's just chosen and, like, picked, and they pick and choose who. You can watch a director walk up to an actor and make sure they're comfortable and ask them if they want anything to eat and just, you know, thank them for being there in the first place, and then in the same breath yell at a PA because he brought them the wrong coffee. And it's just something where, you know, that shouldn't happen. I was on a set recently and I just watching the way that they treated certain people and watching the way that actors get treated and the background actors get treated, it's just something that I don't like at all.
It's deeply upsetting.
It's so upsetting because you see that, and that just, even though LA is not the real world, it mirrors what's happening with the real world. There are certain people that are higher up that look down on everyone below them, or certain people that feel like they have more influence and that gives them a right to have more respect.
Yeah.
From other people. It's just something I disagree with wholeheartedly.
I'm with you.
There's so many people that are doing what I'm doing and don't agree with that. Or would agree with that if I said it, but then in acting wouldn't. Not acting like acting, but like in the real world when they are confronted with a situation, they wouldn't.
Yeah, they don't treat the valet like they treat.
Yeah, exactly.
Their boss.
Yeah.
So if you weren't being an actor slash stand-up.
Okay.
What might you be doing?
Like, if I wasn't in the entertainment industry at all?
Yeah, let's just broaden it out a little bit, because you could easily just say, well, I'd be writing scripts. Yeah. I'd be developing shows. So, because truthfully, you're the kind of person, and this industry is full of people who started, you know, who stepped in with one part of the pie and then ended up in a completely different part of the pie. Like a lot of people start as actors and then they become, you know, writers or agents or whatever. But, like, okay, if you weren't in entertainment at all, what might you be doing, do you think?
I don't know. I always think about journalism was something that I really liked in class, because it's your opinion, it's your voice, but it's also, you know, I wrote for the school paper, I did movie reviews, which isn't anything worth anything. But I always think that, like, my best friends from high school, are one of them wants to be a journalist, and I always think that would probably be what I was doing, because that's the closest you can get to getting your voice out there. But then also the farthest you can get from having people immediately look at you and respect you, which is something I enjoy earning respect. I like being on a set where I feel like I'm a co-star, and then by the end of it, get them to make me feel, or get them to want to say goodbye to me at the end of the day, rather than feeling like they have to.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's something that also is dying, journalism. And there's a lot of people that are, or writing a blog post even, is journalism now.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Because there's no credibility to what a real journalist is and what is someone that has an outlet.
The whole gatekeeper conversation is so, like, double-edged, because on the one hand, it's amazing and cool and radical and revolutionary that we can all get our voices out there. You can make a YouTube video and be discovered and have your own show, yada yada.
Yeah.
But the fact that there's no gatekeepers also means anything goes, and we have nothing, well, not nothing, but I'm exaggerating.
Yeah.
We have a lot of misinformation out there, and nobody to sort through it for us. No vetting is going on, no curating.
Yeah, and that's the hard part with the internet. I mean, when the internet's so new, and there's so many glorious things, there are also so many bad corners of it.
Yeah.
So many different horrible things, and I think that if you have somebody, like a journalist, that is, you know, trying their hardest to get the best information out there, that at least there's that person. You know, on top of all the bad fake news, at least it's that one guy that's trying to get the truth out there. And there are so many, I mean, HBO Vice News, John Oliver, and there's so many people like that that are trying to get real information out there, but it's just shadowed by, you know, misinformation.
There's a lot of noise, that's for sure. So, and there are still a lot of absolutely credible places for information. You just have to cut through the noise to get to them.
I always see, like, my aunt will post, like, did you know that Obama killed an ISIS terrorist by himself? And then it's from, like, allthewaytotheright.org. Why do you think that is a real thing? Like, in school, they taught us to, you know, check our sources.
Critical thinking.
Yeah.
It's critical thinking.
Yeah, it's just, you don't believe everything you read on the internet. And I love that there are journalists out there that are trying to shoot that before it becomes a bigger thing, even though it already is kind of become the thing our horrible election has revolved around.
Well, maybe there'll be a correction because of this, because the consequences have been so dramatic.
Yeah, dire.
So I was trying not to say dire. I was trying to be a little more human handed. I'm trying it so hard.
I know.
So that's a really noble endeavor. So, given that this is what you are doing, have been doing, what advice do you have for kids who think they want this career, or young people who think they want to do something like what you're doing?
Take a step back is my kind of my mindset. If you really think that you want to do this, think about the consequences of not doing what you want to do. Because if you really, really want to be an actor, and you know you are the best in your school, and you're attractive enough to be a leading lady, think about the consequences of going to a place away from your family and throwing yourself at a wall and hoping that somebody grabs you before you fall. It's just, it's not in your favor to make it in this business. And so you really have to be okay with not making it if you want to make it. You have to wholeheartedly understand that you could spend the next 10 years of your life scared and homeless. And you have to be okay with the consequences. Because there are so many kids that think like, oh, it takes a long time. It takes a couple years and then you get a job. But it's not. It doesn't. There are certain people that come here in the first 3 months, they get a job. There are people that have been here for years and years and years and haven't gotten a job. And it's not talent. A lot of people say it's talent. It's not talent. It's the right person to see you. It's how you look. It's, a lot of people think it's looks. It's not. It's just random. It's just absolutely random. So you have to be 100% okay with not being what you want to do. Because there's so many people that come here and want to be an actor and then aren't an actor and get upset. But you knew that was a possibility. In fact, you knew that was probably going to happen. And so coming here hoping that it's going to happen is great. Coming here and knowing that it probably won't is the mindset that I think everybody needs to have.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell people if there's anything else that they can imagine doing, then they should probably do that.
Yeah.
But I do think that even though, you know, random is the order of the day, there are certain things, there's a handful of things, so much of it's out of your control, but there's a handful of things that are in your control. You do what you can.
Yeah.
And then you just let it go to the universe and you see what happens. Yeah. But you do what you can.
You can go to acting class every day, mm-hmm. and be the best actor in the world and never work. And as long as you are satisfied or happy with going to an acting class and that being the acting, then that's fine.
Well, and knowing that you tried.
Yeah. You should always, like, be okay with busking. That's going to be my memoir. Like, be okay with going out there and doing and being a street performer and making that kind of money before you think that going to L.A. is going to be a magical red carpet ride to stardom, because it's not.
I agree. And I also think that if you love the work, if you just love it, love it, love it, then you're okay with busking and you're okay with auditioning.
Yeah.
And you're okay with doing classes because it's all during the work.
Yeah. I mean, I sometimes am sitting around thinking that I hope that I don't get another job for a while so that it forces me to, you know, take and stand up full time. Or like, it just,
yeah.
There's a certain things where you never know what's going to happen and you can't lose that fire. You can't, you know, feel like it's already okay when you want to come down here, because it's never going to be.
So
that's convoluted, but
no, it's really solid advice too. I mean, again, this is not a place where we're being a total Pollyanna helps people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know,
I mean, you can be as optimistic as you want, but I'm sure that you know that actor that was in Friends season one in episode 7 that had a couple lines was optimistic, but you had never seen that person ever again. Like, there's just so many different variables that go into it that hoping that talent and looks is going to take you to where you want to be is never something you can rely on.
Yeah. No,
also,
that's just piece one.
That being said, a lot of people come down here wanting fame. Don't come down here if you want to be famous. If you want to be famous, cut off your foot on YouTube and post it and have people watch a guy cutting off his foot. Don't do it because you want to be
Don't
famous.
Do this at home, kids. But I agree with you completely. Chasing after fame is the worst reason of all to come down here.
There's so many people that are like, what is it like being famous? I'll tell you what it's like being famous. It's the worst part about what we do. The worst part about what we do is that people expect something from us. Because, I mean, I'll talk to every fan, and I am so happy that people want to hear me, and that is absolutely what I want to do. But coming down here so that will happen is something that shouldn't ever be in your mind.
It's a toxic approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an end result that may occur, that has its own consequences, but yeah. It's never a good reason to go after it.
I'm sure if you look at somebody, I can't think of any, but like somebody that gets followed around with paparazzi, that's not the highlight of it.
It's not
the highlight of it, or going around and going to a music festival and wanting to, you know, just relax and feel like nobody's watching you is impossible when people are watching you. And so constantly feeling like you're alone is only possible when you're alone if you're famous like that. And so that is something that people have to take into account, that it's not glory. It's not like you're going to go and people are going to hand you jewels and you're going to be a multimillionaire. It's like that is one of the downsides of it, is that you are always, always having a spotlight on you. And it's hard. That's why so many actors go through weird phases, because sometimes the only escape is drugs, or sometimes the only escape is going crazy so that nobody wants to see you anymore.
Yeah, I think...
my next step. I'm doing a full Joaquin Phoenix.
No. You're too young, Joey. You got too much stuff to do still. Well, so, you've got a big project coming up?
Yeah, kind of. I'm in season 2 of Wet Hot American Summer, 10 years later.
That's pretty hot.
Yeah, that's pretty wet and hot. I know. I love it. It's such an amazing thing to do, because I'm working with the people that I have admired for years. I mean, I spent the last 2 days working with Paul Rudd, which was such an amazing thing. He's an amazing person. I have such a problem, though, with wanting to impress people like that. Like, I try so hard, because I'm like, you know, if I could just relax, I'm sure people would be like, oh, you know, he's a cool guy. You know, talks a lot, but he's a cool guy. I get into that position, and I just try so hard. So I feel like a little bit, like, they might go, oh, he talks a lot and tries to make constant jokes, but... That's who I am, just elevated when I'm working with somebody that I want to impress.
Well, it must have been a blast.
Oh, it was so much fun. I had a blast, and I have the rap party on Saturday, and I'm just excited for people to see it.
Well, when does it come out?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No idea. But season 4 of Liv & Maddie is probably something that I'm excited about, too. January, Stand-Up A-Rooney comes out, which is the episode that I wrote stand-up for.
Oh, you can talk about that now. I was thinking, can I talk about that? Because that's a big deal.
The writers
basically, like, wrote this whole episode around the fact that you really do stand-up.
Yeah.
It's so neat.
They gave me, like, 2 months, and I wrote, like, 20 minutes of material from Joey Rooney's perspective, and I got to do it multiple times in the latter part of the 4th season, and it was just such a... It's working with people like that, that trust you like that, is an amazing feeling. Because there are so many people that just want to get what they want to get from you. And people that are willing to trust you with something like writing stand-up for your character. And it's an amazing
thing. It's unheard of. Absolutely. I mean, really, the executive producers of that show gave everybody that was associated with the show so many special opportunities and to shine.
Yeah.
You know, and we are all just so excited.
I know. I'm really excited for people to see it. I don't know what the final cut looks like, because there's some, sorry, I don't think I'm allowed to talk about Uber on Disney Channel, and that was the punchline to one of my jokes. So we'll see what it looks like. But
we'll see what we ended up with.
But I was super happy with that episode. It was like my favorite probably episode to film.
Well, season 4 of Liv & Maddie is really cool. Yeah, so there's still a lot of that coming up still.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All up until it's not.
And then everything that's after that. Okay, well, so we'll keep an eye out for season 4 of Liv & Maddie, and then also Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah, 10 years later.
10 years later. And how can people find you on social media?
I'm at Joey Bragg, JoeyBragg, pretty much on everything. And then Facebook, it's like Joey Bragg Comedy. But if you search Joey Bragg, I'm the verified one with the hot face.
That's how you know it's not one of those fake ones.
Yeah.
And then how do people find your podcast?
Just go to dudesoffuturepast.com, and it's all there.
Also on iTunes, right?
Yeah, it's on iTunes. It's on anywhere podcasts are found, except Spotify, because Spotify is stupid.
On the record.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
Joey, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for wanting me to talk.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you like what you heard here, please subscribe. It's free. Go to my website, hollywoodparentsguide.com, and click on the subscribe button. You'll get weekly podcasts and blog posts delivered right to your inbox that will educate and inspire you. And if you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. Or for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to hollywoodparentsguide.com and click on the consultation page. For the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.